Today, an election campaign through the eyes of Guardian sketchwriter John Crace, and why our charity appeal this year is all about trees. This week I rang my colleague John Crace, who was feeling a little tired.
John, are you there?
No, I think I've gone into a coma.
I'm just so interesting to talk to.
Yeah.
He's told me he gets anxious at the very thought of an election campaign.
I mean, literally, you are living on your nerves every day. I mean, because you never know where anybody's going to be until late the night before. It's impossible to plan anything. But, you know, you just sort of have to sort of make a guess for it. I think I'm going to get through it unscathed, but not definite.
As the Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter, John has spent the past 5 weeks catching trains at the crack of dawn to secure front row seats at events anywhere in the country where he can scrutinise the key players in this election. And now he's ready to dish the dirt on all of them. From the Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, John Crace's election. I'd like to start with a warning. John is about to be extremely rude, but about pretty much everyone. MPs voted for an election, John, and I think the whole country were like...
You're joking.
Oh, no.
Not another one?
What was your first thought when it was called?
It was a mixture of... Well, finally, the inevitable has happened.
Brace yourselves. Another general election could be just around the corner.
How might the battleground shape up in a snap general election?
Are we going to have an election, Mr. Rees-Mogg?
Well, you'll have to ask other people.
It had been hanging over us for so long, ever since Boris Johnson had become Prime Minister. But it was also the first lie of the election, which has been an ongoing kind of feature of the sketches.
I don't want an election. You don't want an election.
Because Boris was always saying, this is the election that nobody wanted. But Boris called 3 votes to try and get a general election.
It is time, frankly, for this parliament to make way for a new, fresh parliament that can deliver on the priorities of the British people.
Why do you call him a liar?
Because, oddly enough, sometimes in the sketch you have to tell the truth. I mean, Boris is a liar. We've had this thing about 40 new hospitals.
It is a programme of 40 new hospitals, starting with 6.
Which turn out, on reflection, to be 6 refurbishments, which probably means that the windows get repaired in the A&E for about 3 hospitals. And then we've had the 50,000 new nurses.
We pledge 50,000 more nurses.
Which is only 50,000 if you count the 19,000 that haven't been deported. And then we got Boris refusing to say how many children he has.
How many children do you have?
Look, I love my children very much, but they are not standing at this election.
No.
I mean, strictly speaking, that's not a lie.
It's not an encouragement to believe him, is it? Because, I mean, most people, I think you could probably tell me how many children you have. But Boris, unfortunately, seems to be completely amnesiac about his own children.
Lawyers.
The big lie is, of course, the great slogan of the campaign, which is Get Brexit Done.
With a deal that is pre-cooked, ready to go, get Brexit done.
Boris Johnson's great line is, vote for a Tory majority and on 31st of January we'll be out of the EU and Brexit will be done. No, it won't. We're going to spend years arguing over a free trade agreement with the EU. I mean, Boris seems to not even understand the deal that he's negotiated with the EU, because there will be a need to be tariffs and border checks, and Northern Ireland will be treated differently to the rest of Great Britain.
You just said there will be no checks on goods going from GB to Northern Ireland under the deal you struck with the EU. Either you don't know the detail of your policy or you're lying. Which is it?
Well, George, you know perfectly well that goods going from NIGB, GBNI will have no checks. The only checks will be for goods that are going via NI into Ireland. Everybody understands that.
It seems that the bigger the lie, the better the chances you have of getting away with it.
Saying that this is wrong, the government's own impact assessment is wrong, your Brexit secretary is wrong, all these people are wrong. And you're right.
Yes.
In a way, Labour's main problem has been to play by the sort of old 2015 rules, whereby you just exaggerate a bit in your manifesto and on the campaign trail. But Boris merely just sort of makes stuff up as he goes along now and whenever he's found out, he doubles down on it.
In a kind of strange career, in a way, you're basically paid to closely observe Boris Johnson. Can you tell when he's lying?
I think I can, because he's got so many giveaways. For a start, there is the smirk. It's sort of like, ooh, I've been caught out. What shall I say? Then there's often the tug at the pre-tousled hair, you know, and then his arms also shoot out in sort of strange directions, almost like a kind of nervous tic. And you can't help feeling this must be all horribly familiar to many of the women in his life.
Lawyers again. What does it say about politics now and in the future if politicians have become so economical with the truth?
Well, I think it is genuinely a problem. On the Channel 4 debate on Sunday night, Cathy Newman said,
"In this campaign, have politicians and candidates generally been honest and trustworthy? Just 10% of you thought they had."
And my immediate thought was, who are the 10%? Who are these people who imagine that they're telling the truth? I mean, it's had an effect on me and my job too, because in the early days of sketch writing, a lot of my work would be, you know, having fun, exaggerating things a bit. And now I basically just sort of write it down as it comes and just claim all the lols for myself.
Morning, Prime Minister. Will you come on? Good morning, Britain, Prime Minister.
It's been comedy the way at times Boris Johnson has suddenly gone into hiding when it suits him. Yesterday, when Good Morning Britain were trying to get him on, an aide swore at them, pushed them out of the way, and then Johnson disappeared into a fridge.
Right, he's been taken inside, into the freezer.
He's gone into the fridge.
There's a bunker.
Earlier, he had to be replaced by a block of melting ice in the Channel 4 climate debate.
Instead, a reminder, the ice caps are melting as politicians around the globe fail to cut greenhouse gas emissions in time to stop rising temperatures.
So who's he sending out to bat for him instead?
Michael Gove has been allowed out from time to time.
Hello. How are you? I'm Ed from
Charlton. Hi, Ed. Hi. Will you be able to put me on the debate floor tonight?
At the climate change debate, he turned up demanding to be allowed to replace the block of ice.
No, I'm grateful.
It was a leader's debate. It's as simple as that. You're not the leader.
Well, as Stanley said, I am a leader.
He is. Not the leader. Come on.
Channel 4 did have to sort of point out that Boris hadn't been barred from the debate. He had chosen not to turn up to it.
I'm so sad that the other parties are scared, running scared, of debating the Conservatives on the environment.
Another early start to down the way to Southampton.
We also have sort of Matt Hancock. So I call him Tigger because he's so terribly enthusiastic.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm in Cheltenham and it is snowing. And I'm incredibly excited to be going to Cheltenham Hospital.
Presumably Tory central office send him lines to say for the day. And you can guarantee that he's going to be up first to answer them and be up before dawn tweeting about them.
Another dark, frosty and early start. I'm off to Yorkshire again with our message that we need to deliver Brexit.
Only yesterday we had a picture of him looking terribly moody in a harbour in Scotland saying, contemplating the importance of the union. Like a sort of perfume ad, Hancock, pour homme.
And he's always got his coffee with him.
I invest in the NHS and I've got my coffee with me.
And there's been almost no women out on the trail. Nicky Morgan turned up for a day.
But we have in the Prime Minister's place Nicky Morgan, who is the culture secretary.
Oh, my God, is a senior member of the Conservative Party. Well, at the moment, you're leaving, aren't you?
Which was, again, extraordinary in itself, because we kind of thought the one woman that he is sending out is a woman who's actually standing down at the next election. And she was there to sort of defend the 19,000 imaginary nurses.
Nursing care.
Yes, but it's not more nurses. Nicky Morgan, isn't it a bit like saying on Good Morning Britain tomorrow morning there will be three more presenters? And then tomorrow you just have exactly the same number of presenters because you managed to persuade me, Piers and Charlotte to carry on doing the job tomorrow.
Well, not there's an additional three. Not there's an additional three. And then you've got your six, haven't you? But the fact is that three of you have been encouraged to come on Tuesday morning and not just on Monday morning.
Yeah, Nicky.
Do we even not have really even odd maths?
Even as you
here.
Said that sentence, you knew that
the
was
the best thing
wrong.
To do, I mean, as with Jacob Rees-Mogg, is to keep them all tucked up asleep, really. Jacob Rees-Mogg has been given sort of huge quantities of barbiturates and has been in a sort of medically induced coma for 6 weeks. There was a video posted of him or a lookalike in a stone circle somewhere.
I'm here by the standing stones in Stanton Drew, thought to be 4,500 years old, some of the most important stones in this country.
Was that not him?
Well, I don't know. It seemed odd to be pitching for the Druid vote, really.
Who's been doing the media rounds for Labour?
It's been Rebecca Long-Bailey.
Ensure that we have this as a bedrock of our economy to function. And when I see other industrial nations harnessing
who
this technology...
hasn't been as bad as all that, but she is a bit like listening to wallpaper.
That upsets me. We had a fantastic review, for example, that the government commissioned themselves.
She sort of fades into the background quite easily.
Advanced manufacturing to transform our GDP.
And never says anything that might surprise you. And then we have the two main contenders for Labour who are wheeled out on every occasion. Barry Gardner.
I'm sorry, I don't believe what President Trump is saying.
I'm not trying to duck his question. I've taken it on board. I understand he disagrees with
Barry Gardner.
Dominic, why are you sweating then and why am I not?
And Richard Bergen. And Richard Bergen, I mean, it's sort of unbelievable. He is the idiot's idiot, really. There is no bad situation which he can't make worse. And yet Labour continually send him out. The classic example of Richard Bergen being Richard Bergen, he said to Kay Burley on Sky...
The polls say you won't win.
Pardon?
The polls say you won't win.
The polls said we wouldn't win last time.
You didn't. But
and she had to point out, well, you didn't win last time. And it was almost as though that thought had never occurred to him.
We didn't quite win, but we came back from further behind than we are now.
I mean, this is our shadow justice secretary. If there's a Labour government, he will be in charge of the courts and policing. Imagine.
When you've seen Jeremy Corbyn, how has he appeared?
At the very beginning of the campaign, he did look a bit like his old self from 2017.
Thank you for your support, but above all, thank you for the effort you're going to put in to elect a Labour government.
But then since then, it's almost as though the magic isn't quite there this time. At some press conferences and rallies, he's looked like he's in a hostage video.
The future is ours to learn. This is groundbreaking stuff. This,
you know, help, help.
Enrich the lives of thousands.
I mean, he has kept going. There is a sort of Chumbawamba character to him where you keep knocking him down and he keeps getting up again. But I don't know, you know, how long he can keep it up for.
And throughout this, although the leaders have dodged one or two, there have been TV debates. What have been the highlights of them?
I'm not sure that there has been any real highlights. I would sort of call them lowlights, really.
But there was one TV appearance that was missing, and I think it's the one that most of us would say we would have liked to have watched, and that is a grilling of the Prime Minister by the BBC's most ferocious interviewer, Andrew Neil.
But the Prime Minister of our nation will, at times, have to stand up to President Trump, President Putin, President Xi of China. So it was surely not expecting too much that he spent half an hour standing up to me.
I mean, good night. Some say Philip Schofield made up for it.
Can you get us out cleanly? Do you promise?
I'm not sure that Philip Schofield did make up for it quite.
I was being sarcastic.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God, sorry.
Although he was actually very tough on Jeremy Corbyn, but I see getting some flack for being a little soft on Boris Johnson.
Afterwards, Boris was happy to appear with a sort of selfie with Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby. Probably not something that Jeremy Corbyn would have wanted to do after his experience with them, where he was repeatedly pressed on anti-Semitism and did eventually say, yes, he was sorry about it.
So are you sorry for
obviously,
anything that's happened?
Obviously, I'm very sorry for everything that's happened, but I want to make this clear. I am dealing with it.
And the Conservatives have faced accusations of racism as well because of an unbelievable amount of cases involving Islamophobia among candidates. I mean, Philip Schofield did manage to get an apology.
Would you like to
apologise? Thousands of articles. What I will say is, and I've already said sorry for any offence that I've caused, and I say it again.
But on the whole, Boris Johnson has tried to deflect this.
Yeah, and I mean, Boris Johnson has almost totally got away with it. On the day that the chief rabbi came out against Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party, which was also incidentally the day that the Muslim Council of Great Britain came out against the Tories, I was up in Bolton because Sajid Javid was giving his one and only speech of the entire campaign.
Last night I stayed with family in Rochdale. And this morning, I had the profound experience of walking down memory lane.
And I have to say that it was a speech to 12 people. And it was so badly attended that I, as a sketch writer, even got a question.
Sorry, it's John Crace from The Guardian.
And you know that it's the kiss of death for any political event for someone as frivolous as a sketch writer to get a question.
What did you ask?
My question to him was that, look, during the Tory leadership campaign, during the debate with that, you may remember Saj got all candidates to agree to an independent inquiry into Islamophobia within the Tory party. And Boris, yes, of course. And I mean, that's the last we've heard of it. And I said, you know, are you disappointed that you're not getting your independent inquiry? And Sajid couldn't answer that either.
Sorry, I missed you there, John, earlier. But on that point, that I'm not disappointed. It's not been, nothing's going to be watered down. You know, we are absolutely committed to doing everything we can.
We haven't talked much about the other parties. For example, the Brexit Party and the Liberal Democrats. Nigel Farage had a big start to the campaign when he managed to get Donald Trump to call him in on LBC and give him an endorsement.
Happening over there, you're like a great tea leaf reader. But I'd like to see you and Boris get together because you would really have some numbers because you did fantastically.
But you followed him on the trail. How's he got on?
There is one person who can always defeat Nigel Farage, and that is Nigel Farage. I mean, basically, the Brexit Party was his party. I thought it was different this time. They looked like a new, more professional, slicker operation. It wasn't like the old sort of boozy UKIP version of before, where with a few sort of racist colonels coming out of the closet. But Nigel has managed to upset almost everyone in his own party now. First of all, by not standing as a candidate himself.
I thought very hard about this. How do I serve the cause of Brexit best? Because that's what I'm doing this for. Not for a career. I don't want to be in politics for the rest of my life.
You know, he issued this great ultimatum to the Tory party.
The only way to solve this is to build a Leave alliance across this country.
Well, I will stand down candidates against you, and you must stand down candidates where we have a chance of winning. And the Tory party said, actually, no. And he said, OK, well, we'll still stand down our candidates anyway.
The Brexit Party will not contest the 317 seats the Conservatives won at the last election.
The master tactician had outthought himself. Only this week he's declared that he is going to rename the Brexit Party after the election, the Reform Party.
New name?
Absolutely, I've registered it already.
Okay.
And campaign heavily on House of Lords reform and electoral reform, which would sort of make him into the Liberal Democrats.
Speaking of which, I mean, they again were expecting great things because, like the Brexit Party, they did very well in the European elections. And it started well for them, didn't it?
They look like a natural home for many Remainers.
And today I am standing here as your candidate for Prime Minister.
But it hasn't really worked out like that. I mean, I think the hardcore Remainers, they've still managed to keep. But the revoke Article 50 immediately hasn't landed at all well. And then there was the sort of Joe Swinson problem.
240,000 people had their benefits cut because you went along with the bedroom tax. Would you like to apologise to them today?
Yes, I am sorry that I did that. It was not the right policy and we should have stopped it.
I don't know what it was with her. I don't know whether British voters have a problem with strong, powerful young women.
What? So you're saying you don't know if it was sexism?
I don't know if it was sexism or not. But the polling also came back that found that actually Joe Swinson lost support the more she was seen.
Arguably, one of the people who's had the best campaign has been Nicola Sturgeon.
And then let's get on with the job of building a better, fairer European nation for this and for the generations to come. Thank you very much indeed.
I think there's a lot of people in the UK who are probably thinking, if only Nicola Sturgeon wasn't the leader of the SNP. I mean, her message is very clear. She comes across as very likeable. You may not agree with what she says, but there is a coherence to her position. You don't feel like you are being lied to when Nicola Sturgeon speaks to you.
In the last campaign, you really made waves by coining the so-called Maybot. I mean, arguably, Boris Johnson this time round, it's just like the kind of updated version, basically quite robotic with one soundbite, get Brexit done, but sounding slightly more human.
Cards on the table. Theresa May was very, very good to me professionally. I mean, she provided so much material. Because I do sort of miss her, because there was an integrity to her incompetence. You did at least imagine that she was doing the wrong thing for the right reason. But with Boris Johnson, it feels like we're in the sort of political Wild West. There is no morality left in politics. Just literally anything goes. We are probably on the verge of having a prime minister who is the least coherent prime minister in living memory.
If they win, John, if they win.
If they win, we may wake up to the great dawn of another hung parliament, which personally I would quite like, really.
Better for sketch writers.
Better for sketch writers, probably better for the country.
Well, on that note, I will bid you farewell, John.
Thank you, Anoushka. Oh, can you give my book a plug while you're about it?
We'll just leave you saying that at the end of the tape.
Fair enough. Decline and Fail, Read in Case of a Political Apocalypse, available from all good bookshops.
I'm going to get it out in the library.
No.
That was John Crace giving himself a plug. But seriously, our producer, Rachel Humphreys, really enjoyed reading back all his election sketches. Do go to theguardian.com to catch up. Coming up, Patrick Butler on a positive and practical way to help the planet this Christmas. Now, every year The Guardian and Observer has a charity appeal where we support a cause that reflects our values and those of our readers and listeners. This year, it's all about the climate emergency, and our social policy editor, Patrick Butler, explains why.
It's a story that The Guardian's been really passionately interested in. You'll have seen our reporting of it. We've talked about it on the podcast and so on. And it's been a cause that we've thought about as doing as a charity appeal for some years now. It's never quite been right, but this year it felt right. Whether it's burning rainforests or it's melting ice caps or it's Greta Thunberg and the rise in youth activism, we've recognised this as one of the great topics of the age. And it seemed a natural fit for our charity appeal. When we sat down to decide, well, which charities are going to do this? Hundreds out there. And Eventually, we decided that what we wanted to do was something around natural climate solutions. So we chose four charities, each in their own different way, supports practical, natural solutions to the climate crisis. And in this case, the common theme is trees. Trees produce oxygen. They absorb carbon dioxide. They stop the decline of biodiversity and protect wildlife. They reduce air and noise pollution. They can prevent flooding. And trees and forests and woodlands are very beautiful things too. We know that there are urgent, giant policy steps that are needed to arrest global heating. A Green New Deal, for example. We need to cut carbon emissions, and that needs big decisions by governments. But we also want to look at ways that we as individuals can make a difference, where we can do something practical. And that again brought us back to trees. We've got three UK-based charities and one from the Amazon. The biggest is the Woodland Trust. It's the UK's largest woodland conservation charity. They've planted nearly 50 million trees. They want to plant more, but more importantly for us, as well as planting trees, they want to protect trees. So they do a lot of work protecting ancient woodlands from developers like the HS2 developers and so on. Trees for Life is a really lovely Scottish-based environment charity, and their project is to rewild a few thousand hectares of the Scottish Highlands. And what that means is they're returning that area of the Highlands to its natural state. But it's also about bringing people in. So you have this beautiful idyllic spot miles from anywhere, and they bring people in from the city to just experience this beautiful place. The third one is Trees for Cities. It's about planting trees in urban areas, often forgotten urban areas. So we're talking about housing estates and the poorer side of town, and in schools too, so it's very educational, and it's about not only planting trees, but teaching people about the environment. Global Green Grants Fund is a charity that we're supporting, which works in the Amazon. Now, it's an intermediary charity. It's UK-based. We will give them a share of our money, and they will distribute it amongst scores of local land rights groups which live in the rainforest. So it's all about supporting indigenous people to protect their own environment. Protecting trees is also about protecting people and communities. So what can you do to get involved? The first thing you can do is donate. You can give online, you can give by phone, or you can give by check. Guardian and Observer journalists are holding a telethon on the 21st of December, so you can call us up and talk to us and donate. You can speak to journalists, including Kath Viner, the editor, Gary Young, Marina Hyde, Polly Toynbee, Owen Jones, and George Monbiot. We're going to share all your donations amongst these four fantastic charities. We'd also urge you to take a look at the charities. We think they're great, so take a look, and you may want to get involved as a volunteer. But overall, we'd like you to keep the climate crisis uppermost in your mind, and how we as a society can beat this climate crisis. Whatever the result of the election, this cause isn't going away. We'll need your help.
That was Patrick Butler. If you'd like to give to our annual appeal, please visit guardian.ctdonate.org or call 0151 284 1126. For more information, visit our website. We'd be very grateful for anything you can give. Now, before we go, I hope you listened to our episode yesterday on homelessness with Simon Hattonstone and Danny Lavelle. I'm delighted to tell you that on Tuesday night, they won a prestigious British Journalism Award for their series. Very well deserved, even if they did beat a Today in Focus episode on the Bolo Youth Club in West London, which was also nominated. That's it for today. My thanks to John Crace and Patrick Butler. This episode was produced by Rachel Humphreys and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Ian Chambers. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Tomorrow's episode is going to come out a little later than normal because we're going to work through the night to bring you the election results.